Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and I'm Heather Vail. Joining me is Gordon Prouty, Foundation President at the Nevada Donor Network. The organization is holding its annual Inspire Hope Dinner and Show fundraising event in a few weeks. Gordon, thank you so much for being here today.
Heather, thank you for having me. It means a lot to not only me, but the whole organization, so we appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, of course. So first of all, what exactly is the Nevada Donor Network?
Sure. So the Nevada Donor Network is the organ procurement organization here in Nevada. We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and our mission includes saving and healing lives through the gift of organ, tissue, and eye donation, and also working to expand transplant services here in the state of Nevada. We have been in existence for close to 40 years. So we've been around for a while. Since our current CEO joined the company about 14 years ago, we moved from a tier 3 status, which is not good, to now where we are a tier 1A status and recognized as one of the best OPOs in the country. We are responsible for recovery and allocating organs, tissue, and ocular here in the state of Nevada. And when I talked about another part of our mission being to expand transplant services, we're also taking on an initiative to work to make transplant services more available for Nevadans, because that is another area of healthcare that we are drastically underserved. And so that's something that we're embarking on, and I'd be happy to explain a little bit more about that for you as well.
Yeah, for sure. First of all, what specifically is the Nevada Donor Network Foundation?
So the Nevada Donor Network Foundation was started about 6 years ago as part of the End the Wait campaign. So when I mentioned earlier that we're really working to expand transplant services in Nevada, that's where the idea of creating the foundation to raise funds was started. On a per capita basis, Nevada donates more organs than any state in the country. But unfortunately, more than 90% of those organs leave the state because we don't have the transplant services here in Nevada that are needed. Currently, there is one transplant center in Nevada. It's here at UMC. They can do kidney transplants, and they have a pancreas program as well. Anytime anybody needs anything else, heart, lung, liver, intestines, any other organ transplant you need, you have to leave the state to get that. And if you don't have the means to do that, that ends up being a very difficult decision. You know, currently there are 100,000 people nationwide on the organ wait list, with 700 of those here in Nevada. We believe that because the transplant services are limited here and people have to have the means to leave the state to get a transplant, we think the number of people who should be on a wait list is probably at least three times that. So when the foundation was launched, it was with the mission to help fund all the activities of the Nevada Donor Network, but really focusing on expanding transplant services here in the state of Nevada, because we believe that Nevadans should get the care they need right here in Nevada.
Yeah, definitely. So how do you plan to expand transplant services here in Nevada?
Well, what we've done so far is, in the amount of time that we've been in existence, a few years back, we were able to receive an ARPA grant from the state of Nevada, which allowed us to work to fund something called, we term the Nevada Transplant Institute. The Nevada Transplant Institute is an initiative where we will create the infrastructure to expand transplant services in Nevada. So what we've been able to do is we hired transplant surgeons to come in, and we have a partner up in Northern Nevada at Renown. And Renown, in partnership with Nevada Donor Network and the NTI, are creating the Renown Transplant Institute and are ready really within the next few weeks, if not the next week, to do the first kidney transplant ever in Northern Nevada. And that institute, the staffing that's come in, the clinic that's been put in place, we're all helped by the funds raised by the foundation. What we hope to do is get a partner down here in Southern Nevada so that we can add a transplant center here and also put a clinic in here where we can see patients. But that is just step one. We also want to expand soon after we get the Transplant Institute up and running. We'd like to expand into liver and eventually other organs so that, once again, people can get the transplant services they need right here in the state.
Okay, awesome. What would you say to people who aren't sure whether they want to donate their organs?
You know, that's a great question. I appreciate that. You know, we have about 60% of Nevadans currently are registered as organ donors. And there are a lot of concerns and questions about, you know, why would I want to do that? Probably the thing I would say is that it's really the gift of life. Do you know that one organ donor can save up to eight different people through that gift of life? And through tissue and ocular donation, they can impact by healing or improving the lives of up to 75 other human beings. So it's an incredible gift, and it's a needed gift because these people are waiting for that gift in order to save their lives. I know there are a lot of questions and perceptions about organ donation, but people can easily come to our website, mvdonor.org, and get more information or reach out to one of our volunteers to answer any questions they may have. But I think what also happens is when we do different tabling and education at events, we're able to share more to prospective donors about what their gift can mean and the importance of doing that. But we do encourage people when we're doing an education or if they want to reach out to us to give us any questions that they might have so we can put their minds at ease.
Okay. Now, when you say 60% of Nevadans are registered as organ donors, is that through the DMV that shows on their driver's license?
It can be through the DMV. You can register that way here in the state. You can also go to nvdonor.org and can register through us. You'll be connected to registerme.org, which is a national organization. You'd be on the national registry. So there are a number of ways that you can do that, but all inclusive Nevada is about 60% of all residents. And obviously our community engagement team works to increase that number as we spread education about the importance of organ donation.
Okay, and what's a living donor?
So a living donor is somebody in many cases where maybe they were a family match, but they are someone who maybe gave their kidney to a family member or a close friend, or they could do a liver donation as a partial liver. We just had an event here at our offices this past Friday where one of our foundation board members shared her story where she gave a kidney to her daughter. Her daughter had a kidney defect that was discovered when she was a younger girl. And by the time she got to be 17 years old, she had lost all kidney function and needed to go on dialysis. And they looked at all the family members, and it turned out that her mom was a match. And so they went and went to UCLA, and she was able to give her daughter her kidney. So in many cases, it's a family member or friend. And then we do have some donor heroes that just out of the generosity and wanting to give the gift of life have offered to be a kidney donor to someone they don't even know. We had a situation. We did a Donate Life night with the Silver Knights earlier this year, one of their hockey games. And the heroes they were recognizing, there were a married couple. And this gentleman's wife had benefited, was say her life was saved. She was a kidney recipient, and she got her gift of life from a donor hero. He was so grateful for that that he decided he was not a match to give her his, but he went and did donate, became a living donor of his kidney for someone else in gratitude for the fact that somebody gave his wife that gift.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was an incredible story. It was really an emotional moment at the game.
Yeah, I can imagine. Now, I think that most people know we have two kidneys and you can live with one.
Yes.
But when you say partial liver, I don't know if everyone's aware of how that works.
So what they can do in some cases is by taking a piece of a living donor's liver, they're able to place that in a recipient and be able to restore their life and be able to save their life through that procedure. So that is another option that some people can do, and it could be a family member or it could be someone that just wants to give that gift of life.
Okay, awesome. So, what's the Inspire Hope dinner and show that you've got coming up?
So the Inspire Dinner and Show is our annual gala that we do each year. This year it's going to be August 9th at the Hakkasan Nightclub over at MGM Grand. It's an event that we do. It's one of our larger fundraisers of the year. And it allows us the opportunity to honor donor heroes, their families, donor recipients, and raise money for this important cause. This year we have already surpassed last year in sales. We do still have a number of tables available and opportunities for sponsorships, but it's a great way for us to, celebrate the gift of life that so many donor heroes have given, and also to recognize people who've supported the organization. Earlier in the year, we did the Governor's Award. That's a dinner that we do up at the Governor's Mansion in Carson City, and Dr. Brian Erling, the CEO of Renown Health, was this year's Governor's Award winner. At the Inspire dinner here in Las Vegas, we'll be presenting the Life Award winner, and that's going to go to Mayor Shelley Berkeley. Shelley has served on our board for a number of years. Obviously, she stepped away to become our new mayor. But she was a co-chair of our foundation and very instrumental in helping us get that grant that is allowing us to expand transplant services. So we're really excited to be able to share that honor with her at this year's dinner. It's an amazing event. When I say celebration, it really truly is. It's a way for us to really celebrate life, and it's a party, and it's an incredible show. We work with some really talented producers, and we've been told by some of our guests that it's the best gala show they've ever seen in Las Vegas. So we encourage people, if you're interested, to be a sponsor or to buy tickets to the event, that you can find more information at our website.
So Saturday, August 9th at Hakkasan MGM
Yes.
Grand, what time does it happen?
It's 5 o'clock to 9 o'clock. We'll have a pre-reception from 5 to 6:30. At 6:30, we'll move people from the reception room into the main part of the club, where they'll enjoy a seated family-style dinner at their tables, see a remarkable show, and then from 9 to 11, there'll be an after party. So it's a full evening where we're going to be able to celebrate life and raise money for an amazing cause.
Wow, that sounds great. So, what can people expect in terms of the entertainment?
It's something that you really have to see. I mean,
Okay.
if you think of different shows in town like Absinthe and Cirque du Soleil and some of those, it's high energy entertainment. A number of different acts, combinations of acrobats, singing, dancing, and a few surprises. That'd be the best way to put it. I don't want to give away too much.
Nice. Okay. And do you have a silent auction or anything like that?
Sure, we have a live auction. We've got some incredible live auction items that we've already arranged. We've already got, I think, at least 30 to 32 silent auction items, ranging from staycations to restaurants. I think we even have a package that involves margaritas for life, which I may have to bid on myself. Some great things, though, but we're really excited about it, and we're still wrapping that up. But we've got some great vacation packages and some unique experiences that I think people will really enjoy.
Awesome. And what does the money raised go specifically to support?
So what we're really going to be pushing this year, obviously, with increasing the transplant services here in Nevada. So right now, the foundation is working hard. We'll have the transplant center up in Reno, but now what we're working is to raise money to have a clinic down here in southern Nevada, so that we'll be able to see patients and do the workups and provide the care they need for to be sent up to Reno for those transplants. We're also working to launch our own donor care unit here in Las Vegas, so that we'll be able to provide a much better experience for donors, so that we're able to do recovery and end up in better donation outcomes and a better environment for the donor hero families as they go through that difficult time.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, so you did give the website a few times, but where can people go if they want to find out more about the Nevada Donor Network, sign up as a donor, or buy tickets to the Inspire Gala?
Sure, you can get everything you need at our website, nvdonor.org. And also a little plug, once we're wrapping up our Inspire Hope dinner and show, we're also going to be doing our first ever Nevada Donor Network Foundation Golf Invitational. That'll be coming up on Sunday, October 12th at Las Vegas Country Club. And you'll be able to get information on that at the website as well.
Perfect. Okay. So once again, the website is nvdonor.org. That's NV for Nevada, nvdonor.org. You can find out more about the Nevada Donor Network, what they're doing in the state, how they're looking to expand donor services throughout the state. And if you'd like to become a donor, you can do that there as well, or you can do it through the DMV on your driver's license. And of course, if you want to find out more about the Inspire Hope dinner and show or get tickets to that, again, that's happening on Saturday, August 9th, starting at 5 p.m. at Hakkasan at MGM Grand. And all of that information is also there on the website, nvdonor.org. And we've been speaking today with Gordon Prouty, Foundation President at the Nevada Donor Network. And Gordon, I really appreciate you being here, letting us know more about what the Nevada Donor Network is doing in the state and, you know, the work to spread the word about organ donation, living donors, and helping those families to get the services that they need. Also, the Inspire Hope Dinner and Show Gala sounds like a really fun time. So thank you so much for sharing today.
No, I appreciate the time. You know, I wanted to mention one other thing to put in perspective just how important, what an amazing thing these gifts are. In 2024, just the Nevada Donor Network here in Nevada, we had 206 organ donors, which resulted in 631 organs transplanted. So you can imagine those were all life-saving organs that, you know, really changed an outcome for so many people. In addition, we had 924 tissue donors, 1,444 ocular donors, and over 1,700 birth tissue donors. So people here in the state, through that generous gift, made a significant impact on the lives of literally thousands of people. And so, you know, I want to thank everybody for, you know, making that decision to give that ultimate gift and for their ongoing support. And thank you for your time today.
I'm Silas Norman. Kidney disease is devastating the Black community. We're more likely to have diabetes and high blood pressure, the leading causes of kidney disease.
I have diabetes.
I have high blood pressure.
And we're more likely to have kidney failure.
My mom is on dialysis.
Black people are four times more likely to be on dialysis, yet we're less likely than other groups to get a kidney transplant. As Dr. Silas Norman, a kidney transplant physician, I can tell you that 90% of people with kidney disease don't know they have it. And every day about 12 people die waiting for a kidney transplant. But kidney failure is often preventable. Talk to your doctor about your risk for kidney disease. Insist on getting your kidneys checked regularly, especially if you have diabetes or high blood pressure.
We're the American Kidney Fund. We believe in kidney health for all. Visit kidneyhealthforall.org. That's kidneyhealthforall.org.
I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Julie Hornock, co-founder and president of Labeled and Loved. The nonprofit helps special needs families by preventing caretaker burnout. Julie, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having us and allowing special needs moms' voices to be heard.
Yeah, so what exactly is Labeled and Loved?
Well, we're a nonprofit that serves special needs families, and we do that through helping the moms of children with disabilities, any age, any diagnosis. And we do events for these moms that enable them to meet their lifelines or meet a friend. And we focus on their mental health and their emotional well-being as we go through curriculum that is given to us and approved by psychologists and people in the mental health field. So we can take these moms and allow them to move forward and to begin to release expectations and find the joy in this different type of motherhood.
Wow, that's fantastic. So what inspired you to start the organization?
Well, I have a daughter. Her name is Lizzie, and she is now 22 years old, but she was diagnosed with autism when she turned just after her second birthday. And my life, as I knew it, completely changed. And as mothers, we go into parenthood thinking, okay, it's going to be a certain way. I'm going to go and I'm going to do play dates at the park and I'm going to hang out with my friends and I'm going to put them in preschool. And when you get a diagnosis, like a lifelong diagnosis like autism, it changes everything, where our lives went from what I thought it was going to be to 30 to 40 hours a week of therapy. And I was going to doctor's appointments and therapy and fighting in school, the IEP to try and get the right help for her. So it was just a very different version of motherhood than I thought it was going to be. And in that, it becomes very isolating because we tend to just put our head down and focus on our kids and often forget about our own needs and what we need to be in it for the long term, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. Now, you mentioned events. What kinds of events and other services do you offer to these moms?
Well, we have a what we call the Weekend of Hope retreat. And this retreat is like an incredible experience where the moms get to come. And for three full days, two nights, they are away from their family and focusing on themselves for the very first time in a really, really long time. So when they walk in the door, we have prepared every moment special just for them. So it's a really warm, friendly, non-judgmental environment where they come in and they'll meet other moms just like them. And there's something really beautiful about walking into a room and not having to explain your life for the first time and not being judged because you look the way you look and you haven't had time to be figure out the latest fashion. You're wearing your mom jeans, and everyone in that room has had and heard a diagnosis for their child. And so we just begin to talk to each other, and it's so much fun to know how much you have in common just with that one thing. And then we have what we call big sessions. And in those big sessions, we have speakers from the special needs space. And though those speakers will help the moms kind of begin to look at their expectations and grieve them a little bit, not grieve the children, because the children are the most amazing gifts, but to grieve what we thought motherhood was going to look like. And then we begin to be able to see the joy in front of us and the little things that are still possible in the midst of this very, very different lifestyle. And then we also have, so that's the Weekend of Hope. And we also have so much fun. Like, that's the other thing, is we do some serious stuff, but we have so much fun. And we have a dance party on Saturday night. We have a bunch of breakouts like yoga, and we're going to have spin, and we have a scavenger hunt, and we just have like coffee chat. And then the last day we do a big circle with all of our new sisters, and it'll be like 250 women standing in a circle, and we do a really cool closing ceremony. So that's the Weekend of Hope retreat. Then we have the Sisterhood Circles, which is our monthly meetings. And we have these all across the nation. And if we don't have it in a specific city, then we have it virtually online. But we do have some in Las Vegas starting up in the fall. And this will be meeting once a month and kind of just doing life with your sisters, people that understand. And again, we go through a curriculum that is approved by people in the mental health field, and it really helps us kind of evaluate and move forward. Our whole goal as moms is to recognize that the things we loved before the diagnosis are still there. We just have to kind of reinvent them and repurpose them within the life we have. And then we also have Moms Mingles, and those are one night just free events for community outreach. We'll have another one coming up in Las Vegas on February 3rd, 2026, because we just had one this year. And then that night is just like one night. We get a free meal for all the moms that come, and we just love on them and allow them to talk and start to build friendships in that space and people that understand. And we also have one more thing, Sticky Notes for the Heart, which is just text messages that can encourage a mom anytime. If she's not able to go to any events, or if she just wants extra encouragement, it just pops up on her phone once a week. And she just is reminded that she's loved and that she is brave, and we see her.
Wow, that's awesome. So these events are designed to prevent caretaker burnout, but I know as moms, sometimes we feel guilty about taking time out for ourselves. What feedback have you received from the other moms about dealing with and overcoming that guilt?
Yeah, I mean, really, it's just we have to start to begin to think about it differently, because as a special needs mom, the stats are stacked against you. So if you're a special needs mom, you are 90% more likely to have anxiety and 95% more likely to have depression. And so if you think just of those stats, we're in the divorce rate is 85% in our community. So if we aren't caring for ourselves, and the thing is that our children, our biggest fear as moms, is that what is going to happen to our kids when we die? And we have to forever take care of them, because they aren't necessarily going to be able to live on their own. So we need to take care of ourselves. And so when we're investing in ourselves, we are actually really, truly investing in our family and ensuring that we will forever be able to take care of these kiddos for as long as possible. And so truly, it's like that whole thing of like, you have to fill your own cup to pour out. And we really do have to take care of ourselves to be able to care for our family. So we just try and let them know that this is really for your entire family. It benefits your child and your spouse as well.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So do you know where the monthly Las Vegas Sisterhood Circles will be in the fall?
I do not have a location for it yet. We're still in the midst of training the leaders and getting that going. And so they'll be the ones that pick that out. But it will be on our website as soon as we have that location. They'll be able to see that up on our website.
Nice. Okay. How can listeners support the organization?
Well, if you're a special needs mom, come and experience it, and then you'll be able to support us just by being there and allowing us to love on you and support you. But others who are not in the community, I know it, almost everyone now knows somebody that is dealing with disability within their family, because there's 20 million American families that have disability in it. But we have something called the Encouragement Encounter, and that is just a card that you can get off of our website, and you can either download it for free or you can have them printed through our website. Basically, this Encouragement Encounter, in the community, you're out and about in the wild and you see a mama that has a special needs kiddo and you want to encourage them, but you're scared to say something wrong, or you're nervous she's in the middle of a behavior or something. So you can just carry these little cards in your purse and then you can hand them to that mom. And basically it just says your unseen burdens are now seen and that we love you and we're proud of you and you're doing a great job. And here is the QR code to go to Labeled and Loved for support. And then that way they feel loved and seen. You don't have to worry about saying the wrong thing and you've done your job to support. And then of course, any donations are always greatly appreciated because it just takes a lot of money to run programs that support. So, and we're grateful for any donations.
Awesome. Okay. So you mentioned that the information is on the website or will be on the website for upcoming Las Vegas Sisterhood Circles, Mums Mingle, where people can get the Encouragement Encounter cards and more information about Labeled and Loved. So what is the website where people can go for more?
Labeled, LABELED, and AND Loved, LOVED.org.
Perfect. Okay. So once again, that website is labeledandloved.org, labeledandloved.org. You can find out more about the organization, all the events they're putting on for special needs moms. That includes their Weekend of Hope retreats, their monthly sisterhood circles, which will be coming to Las Vegas in the fall, Mums Mingles, which will be coming back to Las Vegas next February, sticky notes for the heart text messages, and of course, the Encouragement Encounter cards that you can either download or have printed. And all of that's at labeledandloved.org. And we've been speaking today with Julie Hornock, co-founder and president of Labeled and Loved. And Julie, I really appreciate you being here and letting people know more about this amazing organization and what you're doing for the moms who are at risk of facing that burnout from going through so much, dealing with the kids that they love, but it takes a lot of energy, and you're offering them the ability to just kind of take some time for themselves. So it's really fantastic. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you spreading the word.
When I grow up, I want to be a ballerina.
Because dancing makes me happy. I get to entertain people, and nothing makes me feel more like me.
PI, a defect of the immune system, affects millions of children. Early and accurate diagnosis and treatment give children like Olivia a chance to achieve their dreams.
It takes a great team to put on a show. It also takes a great team of caring people to keep a dream alive. And now my dreams are coming true.
For more information, visit the Jeffrey Modell Foundation at info4pi.org.
My name is Ari Zelig. I'm an allergist.
And my name is Alicia Robinson. I'm a detective.
Thank you both for joining me today. Dr. Zelig, what is CSU and what are some common symptoms?
So CSU is a chronic condition that's characterized by the appearance of itching, hives, and or swelling that persists beyond 6 weeks with no known cause. Typically affects females more than males. 20 to 40 is sort of the average age range, although certainly it can affect younger and older adults as well. And for those of you who have experienced, you know, severe bug bites or poison ivy, you can imagine this is the feeling that patients are experiencing on a daily basis. And it really can affect patients' quality of life.
So tell us a little bit about how patients can manage their symptoms and are there some treatment options?
Absolutely. So we typically start out with non-sedating antihistamines during the day. We can increase quite significantly. Typically, guidelines recommend increasing up to 4 times standard dosing of non-drowsy antihistamines. Unfortunately, a lot of patients do break through high-dose allergy pills. And for those patients, we typically recommend Xolair, which is a monthly injection that blocks our allergic antibody, thereby stabilizing our allergic cells to prevent the histamine release that causes this whole cycle. Xolair is an injection once monthly, typically given in the office for the first 3 injections, given the risk of an allergic reaction, including anaphylaxis. And thereafter, if patients feel comfortable, they can be transitioned over to administration over at home.
Alicia, can you tell us about your experience with CSU?
Yes. So my symptoms began one morning. I woke up with an itchy neck and I thought it was because I slept in jewelry. As the day went on, my symptoms progressed. I took an antihistamine and I didn't get relief. Over the next couple of days, my symptoms would develop from itching to hives, and I would scratch so much that I would break skin. There was no part on my body that wasn't itching. I saw multiple doctors who prescribed oral steroids. I didn't get much relief there. So I was referred to an allergist where I met Dr. Zelick, and he would do a full lab workup. And when my results came in, he professionally diagnosed me with CSU and started me on a Xolair regimen.
How did your career as a police officer help you find a path to diagnosis?
That's a good question. So in law enforcement, I believe cops are only as good as their note-taking and their report-writing skills. So I documented my journey. I started to write down my symptoms. I wrote down medications that I was taking and the times that I would take them, just so that I could relay this information accurately to healthcare providers so that we could come up with a quick resolution and recovery treatment plan.
How are you and your allergist managing your CSU today?
So today, just like Dr. Zelick said, I started taking my injections in office and I'm comfortable taking them at home once a month. And with some lifestyle changes, Dr. Zelick mentioned managing stress, I've been able to make some adjustments in my lifestyle to manage and be on a positive road to recovery.
What would you want a friend to know if they're experiencing chronic hives?
So just like Dr. Zelick said, CSU impacts women more than men. So I would want women to know that they don't have to suffer in silence if they're experiencing similar symptoms, such as itching, hives, that they can document their symptoms and speak with an allergist or healthcare provider.
Where can we go for more information on CSU and to learn more about the treatment?
So I would recommend going to Xolair.com, that's Xolair.com, and discussing your condition and treatment options with your healthcare provider.
Thank you both for joining me today.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with Michael Theo, expert at the General Insurance. It's summer road trip season, and Michael has tips to make sure you and your vehicle are ready to roll. Michael, thanks so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me, Heather. I appreciate it.
So what should we check to make sure our car is road ready before pulling out of the driveway for a trip?
I would definitely recommend that you be a little proactive here. Give your car a quick once over before you leave for your trip. If you have a local mechanic or maybe even you have a friend who knows a few things about cars, have them take a look at the sorts of things that could prevent a potential breakdown. That could include checking oil levels, looking at your brakes, tires, windshield wipers. Account for about a week, I would say, so that if there is any service that needs to be done, you can fit it in and you won't have to delay your trip. Also, if you don't have a spare tire, I would recommend you get one and spend a little bit of time educating yourself on how to properly change a spare tire. Now, I can speak from personal experience here. I found myself in a situation when I was on a short little road trip with my then girlfriend, now wife, where I had a flat tire and had no idea how to change it. And it was a very humbling situation. So just having that basic knowledge can save you a ton of time and stress.
Yeah, for sure. So besides a spare tire and learning how to install it, what do we need to have with us as far as an emergency kit goes?
Yeah, this will vary a little bit person to person, so you can tailor it to your own personal preference. But packing an emergency kit is very important. You can include things like jumper cables, flashlight, a first aid kit, water. And if you're me, you're going to focus and spend a lot of time on preparing a snack bucket or, you know, a bag full of snacks. I'm not going on any road trip without being fully prepared with snacks. Also, I would say this might not be as common or natural for people nowadays, but if you can, bring a paper map or maybe even a compass, some form of backup navigation. We're pretty reliant nowadays on our cell phones. But what happens if something unexpected occurs? For example, your phone battery dies or you lose signal. Being prepared with these additional backup navigation methods can really help you get out of a tricky situation.
Yeah, definitely. That's something people don't think about. Now, speaking of that, what are some common auto insurance mistakes or misconceptions that can ruin a road trip?
Yeah, I would say it's quite common, actually, for our customers to not fully understand what is included in their policies. So I would take a little bit of time just to review your current policy so you know what is and what's not included. Also, it's important to know how to file a claim in case something happens. I'll take this opportunity to plug our app, the General's app. The app is a great resource. It's going to allow you to review your current policy, get any pertinent updates, but also it's going to give you the ability to submit a claim quickly if needed. Check on what add-ons are included in your policy as well. That could be things like roadside assistance, towing, or rental coverage. We really don't think about these until we need them. That's actually why the General partners with Nation Safe Drivers. They offer roadside assistance in select markets. So I would definitely check your policy to see if that's included. The goal is pretty simple, though. I mean, we just want to get you back on the road safely and quickly.
Yeah. And another point of confusion around auto insurance is what happens if we borrow or rent a car. So what do we need to know about that?
I would say that it's very important to understand your current insurance situation before you make the decision to either borrow or to rent. If you're going to be borrowing, for example, let's say you're going to be taking a friend's car on the road trip, you're typically going to be covered under their insurance, but that's not guaranteed. So it's really important to confirm that and to know your situation. If you're going to be renting the car, don't just make any assumptions, assuming that you're going to be covered under your insurance. You typically will be, but there are exceptions. So make sure you spend some time investigating that prior to your road trip. You want to avoid any situation where you're not going to be covered when you're out on the road.
Yeah, that brings up a thought. What if we borrow a car from an uninsured driver?
That could be an issue. Again, go back to your policy. Sometimes your policy will include cars that you're borrowing, but there are going to be exceptions and it's going to vary policy to policy. So spend that additional time reviewing your current policy. And if you need to make any updates prior to your road trip, that's the perfect time to do it.
Yeah. Okay. So where can people go to learn more about getting their cars road ready for summer vacation?
I would say, you know, I went over a lot of information today. I'm hoping that your listeners found it to be useful. But if they do want some additional information, they can head on over to thegeneral.com.
All right. Awesome. So thegeneral.com is the website for the General Insurance, thegeneral.com. You can find out more information about their insurance and also general tips and information about getting your car road ready for any summer trips. And we've been speaking today with Michael Theo, expert at the General Insurance. And Michael, I really appreciate you sharing the tips and bringing to mind some things that people don't consider, don't think about. And they're so crucial and really simple to implement and make sure that we know what coverage we have, what we have in the car in case of emergency, and all of that. So thank you so much for your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Yo, howdy, everybody. I'm Chris Walker, the Crosswalk Guy, pleading with all walkers to cross at the crosswalk. Don't be a jerk and jaywalk across the highway, the roadway anyway, because you might die and it won't be pretty. And drivers, watch for me on crosswalk signs all over the place, or my kids on crosswalk signs near schools. Crosswalks are sacred ground. Walkers use them. Drivers respect them. Let's be safe, everybody. Please.
. 2025 has been a hard year for workers in the tech industry, with tens of thousands of them losing their jobs. What's happening here? I'm Megan Goldsby, and I asked CBS News tech contributor Ian Schur to put these layoffs in perspective.
It's definitely hard to say whether or not this is the worst, but it is bad. And part of what's made it bad is that we still see these companies growing, right? We still see them succeeding on many levels, unlike, for example, during the dot-com bust in, you know, the early 2000s, where a lot of companies started disappearing. This time around, you've got these companies continuing to grow, continuing to get funding, but refusing to hire more people. And so in a lot of ways, it almost feels more disheartening because of that.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. We could even see, you know, boarded up storefronts, which I know sounds weird for a dot-com, but I remember that around 2000. You'd see a dot-com, you'd see things boarded up, that sort of thing. But now we're all using our phones, our apps just as much as ever, but people are losing their jobs.
Really fascinating about this time around is that back in the early 2000s, you had people who were essentially, these companies were struggling to make a profit. They were going, you know, IPO, but they weren't really strong companies. This time around, you've got these companies that are pulling in massive profits. And the real kind of issue that they're all facing is, okay, well, you know, what is the future of this job market, right? If these companies are succeeding and the answer is not that they need more money or they need more profits, then what is it going to be about the future of job hiring? And, you know, a lot of people look and say, well, AI is playing a big role here. And there's quite a debate going on about whether AI is stealing jobs away, whether it's cutting out the bottom rung of the ladder, all of these types of things. But it's hard not to hear companies like Google say, you know, a large percentage of their code is now written by AI, and then not think, well, how has that reduced their hiring? Of course it has.
It seems sometimes like tech workers have innovated themselves out of jobs. When we look at AI, when we look at how easy it is to work from home now, meaning people can work anywhere in the country, is that an issue?
I don't know whether or not that in particular has been an issue. And the reason why is that in the latest job market reports that we get from the government, one of the things we see is that other industries are still hiring tech people. And so in a lot of ways, that would argue that these tech people who've left California or gone to other parts of the country or whatever, that they are still somehow finding jobs in other industries. Part of what I think is interesting is that we're at a time when the tech industry is not in a bubble burst, at least at the moment it doesn't feel like that, and yet still it's a hard job market. And I think that cognitive dissonance is why this continues to be a conversation. Whereas if, you know, a lot of the tech companies were struggling to make their profits or going through layoffs, and we saw the finance industry hiring a bunch of tech people, or we saw whatever else, that would make a lot more sense.
Now, it hasn't been on for years, so my references are old, but the show Silicon Valley had a character who would go to work and just have nothing to do, would just end up sitting there getting paid all day. Sometimes I wonder if that situation, not working in tech myself, was that real? Were there just too many people that were hired when everyone was so excited and gangbusters about getting the companies going?
I'm sure that there were some people that way. And the only reason I say that is because there was a trend a few years ago of people on TikTok basically talking about how they had these super easy jobs in tech where it was basically that. Now, maybe they were lying. But, you know, there was definitely a sense that at least some people had kind of hit the payload and were not really working that hard after. And so, you know, when the first round of tech layoffs happened, it seemed, okay, you know, they're cutting fat. But what's continued to go on is that, you know, as these layoffs have gotten into their second, third, fourth cycles, the question really has turned into, you know, are they fundamentally reshaping the employee base, right? Google at one point said they're going to hire a lot more in AI. Are they changing the way that their sales teams work? All of these types of things. And so, yes, I have to imagine that the lazy coder stereotype is probably not happening anymore. But instead now, what you have is all of this interesting conversation around, you know, do people really do their jobs or do they rely on an AI to do it? And, you know, are they trying to pass off their work you know, saying, oh, well, you know, I made this code, but actually the AI did it. And so it's interesting how these conversations change and keep going in a lot of ways.
Yeah, they just keep evolving. Yeah, I'm sure those lazy coders wouldn't want to be advertising that on TikTok right now with all of these layoffs going on if they do exist. So then maybe the jobs aren't as easy. There aren't as many of them. Do you know if people are still going into tech? Is this still an industry that younger people want to be a part of?
Oh, it's definitely a popular industry. And part of it comes from the fact that, you know, there's still that rags to riches story about tech that people see. I mean, the some of the richest people in the world at the moment are tech people still. I think also that we see a lot of capital flowing into AI startups, right? And so there's even kind of a pipeline of people being able to find their way into tech. But the challenge is that at least some of the data is showing that some of those jobs that would have gotten people a foot in the door with the larger tech companies are going away. And so it's going to be interesting to see how that's going to evolve over time. At one point, the tech industry, a lot of hiring happened through what we called acqui-hires, right? Where the company, a big company like Google or Meta would buy a smaller company. And really what they were doing is buying the team and hiring the whole team from that company. And so that may be where things end up going. You know, part of the interesting thing about these cycles is that these tech companies oftentimes are criticized for not coming up with enough good ideas. The truth, of course, is that oftentimes they end up buying a good idea and nurturing it the way it needs to be. That's how Apple software turned out to be the way it was. It was a company called Next that Steve Jobs had helped to fund and found, and Apple bought it at the time that they were able to integrate it into everything. And now it's in behind the iPhone and the Mac. So there are examples where this is going to work out, but it's still disheartening to see, you know, that it's a lot harder to get a job at somewhere like Meta or Google, particularly because these companies have also advertised themselves as being such worker-friendly companies, right? And that whole tide seems to have changed as well.
Yeah, I have friends that have worked there, and that's kind of the draw is, you know, you pick your own hours, work from home, that sort of thing. Do you think that being able to be choosy like that, is that gone for now? Could it come back for these workers?
It definitely seems to be gone on some level. And part of it is because of the pandemic and really the response to the pandemic, right? When a lot of us went home and worked from home, we saw, you know, some of these companies saw some of their highest profits ever. And the CEO said, well, we still were not convinced that people are working well when they're remote or when they're at home. And so they started pushing people back into the office, and it became a culture war. And, you know, it's pretty clear that over time, remote and hybrid work are going to be what the future is. And most people seem to agree on that. But at the moment, you know, you've got companies that have multi-billion dollar headquarters like Apple, but also others that are saying to their employees, no, you need to be in the office regularly. You need to, you know, for whatever reasons, and they're not supporting that. And so on some level, that's helping solve this too, right? Because if you're not interested in moving to Silicon Valley, which is not a cheap place to live, or you want to have that flexibility because you have a family, or you got used to it during the pandemic, or you just don't want to commute anymore, then you're going to just naturally select yourself out, right? And even the tech industry at one point, tech CEOs were saying that was part of the goal, right? It was a strategy that pulling people back into the office was going to help them with attrition and laying people off, because people were just going to leave. They weren't going to put up with it. And sure enough, a lot of people did.
Now, what about workers coming from farther away? What about the tech visas and the current administration? Are we seeing anything with that as far as who's staying and going and layoffs?
You know, that type of data is still really hard to indicate. And part of the reason is because it's still so new, right? I do have a lot of anecdotal stories that I have heard and spoken with people about individually, where, you know, maybe their H-1B has expired or they lost their job and they're terrified. And that is really tough. And by the way, those stories existed before, right? Anyone who is an immigrant on a visa working here knows how stressful it can be that your home is not really your home. At any moment, it could not be your home. And that stress doesn't go away or get worse just because of changing politics. What's interesting is that Trump and his administration have effectively started going after the entire programs and saying that these entire programs can't be allowed to continue. And if they follow through, right, in however way they might, that is going to ultimately start showing up in some of this data. But I haven't seen anything significant yet.
And there's been a lot of talk about how Hollywood may someday not be the center of film if you know, California regulations or whatever you think might be to blame for filming moving outside the state. Do you see a world in which Silicon Valley is not the center of innovation for tech?
There's always been a conversation about whether or not Silicon Valley will be upended or changed or whatever, right? There, in New York, there's Silicon Alley, I remember, right? And in Miami, it's Silicon Beach. And in Arizona, it was Silicon Desert. I mean, everyone's got a Silicon something, it seems. But the interesting thing about it is that despite all of these efforts to really grow patches of the tech industry, the energy and the momentum still seems to revolve around California. And part of that is because of the venture capital people, right? I mean, you've still got all of that money flowing through. You also have the networks of people who know one another, who help one another find jobs. They help find each other co-founders, whatever else. That is something that is still very strong in California. What I do see increasingly, though, is that there are larger communities of people doing tech things outside of California. So it's not so much that California is shrinking, but rather that these nascent efforts are growing. And part of it, by the way, is because of the tech companies themselves. Apple, Tesla, a bunch of Microsoft, Dell, they all are investing in Texas, for example. Oracle literally moved their headquarters. And so in some ways, that is playing a part. But at the end of the day, I think it's going to be just like the other end of this conversation, right? The question of whether or not we can ever manufacture an iPhone in the United States. The whole conversation starts coming down to how are supply chains built and, you know, where are these parts kind of being not just manufactured, but then shipped, and how are the supply lines set up and all of that. That is what determines in part whether or not you can build an iPhone in America. Similarly here, Silicon Valley's kind of tech hubbiness really comes from both the pipeline of people, but then also the churn that exists within Silicon Valley. And that's not going to just go away anytime soon. It's going to be something that, if it ever changes, it'll be something rather slow.
That was CBS News tech contributor Ian Schur, and I'm Megan Goldsby.
Are you looking for more in this world? Are you ready for something bigger? Then we are looking for you. The big-hearted, the bold, the messy and the gutsy. The teachers, the growers, the builders. The skilled, the sharers, the change makers. We need you. We are the Peace Corps. In more than 60 countries, we go all in and all out. We are volunteers, partners, communities, working together, living together, bringing our experience, passion, and joy to building a better world together. From tackling climate change in Mexico to keeping kids healthy in Kenya, from sustainable farming in the Philippines to education in Kosovo, we learn more, give more, share freely, and serve boldly. Are you ready to tackle the tough stuff? To go the distance to make a difference? Then we have a place where you belong. Join us at peacecorps.gov.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives and charity events around the Valley. Monday's Dark with Mark Chinook is a bi-monthly musical fundraising party at The Space, with each event raising $10,000 for a specific charity in 90 minutes. Upcoming shows include this Monday, July 7th at 8 p.m., benefiting the Professional Firefighters of Nevada Benevolent Association, and Monday, July 21st at 8 p.m., benefiting Super Summer Theater. Get tickets or find out more details at mondaysdark.com. That's mondaysdark.com. The 6th annual Battle for Vegas charity softball game between the Vegas Golden Knights and the Las Vegas Raiders is happening next Saturday, July 12th, with gates at 6 p.m. and first pitch at 8 p.m., plus post-game fireworks at 9:30 at Las Vegas Ballpark. Watch your favorite sports stars battle it out on the ball field, all for a good cause. Find out the details or get your tickets at battleforvegas.com. That's battleforvegas.com. The Las Vegas Clark County Library District's holding their annual free Summer Challenge Reading and Activities program through July 31st. This year's theme is all about travel and exploration, and they have lots of special events, performances, STEAM activities, and prizes up for grabs. Find out more or get started at thelibrarydistrict.org/summerchallenge. That's thelibrarydistrict.org/summerchallenge. The Nevada Donor Network's hosting their 2025 Inspire Hope Dinner and Show fundraising gala on Saturday, August 9th, starting at 5 p.m. at Hakkasan Nightclub in the MGM Grand. Find out more, become a sponsor, or get your tickets at nvdonor.org. That's NV for Nevada, nvdonor.org. And the Las Vegas Rescue Mission is holding their annual bottled water drive through August 31st. When the summer is hot, vulnerable community members experiencing homelessness need water more than ever. You can drop off bottled water donations at the Las Vegas Rescue Mission security gate 24/7. Find out more at vegasrescue.org. That's vegasrescue.org.